It's on Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris. Tomorrow, we revisit the moment when President Jimmy Carter posthumously was awarded Martin Luther King Jr. the Presidential Medal of Freedom. This week, we pay tribute to King to mark 50 years since his death. How would you describe his legacy? Give us a call at 404-500-9457. You can also reach us on Twitter. Our handle is at OST Talk, and be sure to join the program tomorrow at 9 a.m. for more. Americans take to the streets to voice their anger, declare their despair, and call for change for a lot of reasons. Last month, young people led the demonstrations against continuing gun violence following the Parkland school shooting in Florida. Yolanda King, the granddaughter of Dr. King, added her voice to the cries for gun control.
My grandfather had a dream that his four little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that enough is enough. And that this should be a gun-free world. Period.
Okay. Hollywood voiced its Me Too movement after actresses came forward with sexual misconduct allegations. Actress Viola Davis spoke up for those affected.
I am speaking today not just for the Me Toos, because I was a Me Too. But when I raise my hand, I am aware of all the women who are still in silence.
The 1960s saw and heard the most famous and remembered speech of the civil rights movement at a march in Washington, D.C.
I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yes.
But how effective are marches in sparking real and lasting change? I'm joined by three guests. Coco Pappy is a community organizer based in Savannah. Anjali Injeti is an Atlanta-based freelance writer and activist. And civil rights historian Derek Gilliard is here with us as well. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, thank you for having me.
Coco, let me start with you. What was the first march you remember organizing? Let me start there.
The first march I ever organized was the Women's March last year. And so it was a Georgia State team. It was myself, Hillary Holly, Lindsay Arundel, Naja Payne, and a handful of other really moved women who were just kind of like, this is something we have to do, right?
Yeah. What was the most difficult aspect of organizing the rally?
So I actually think that organizing the march isn't the hard part. I think the hard part is actually getting people to move into the secondary action, right? So showing up and marching and yelling and holding the sign is great. It's a great first entry point. But I think then it's how do you show people that there's more work to be done than just marching, right? Like, what
right,
do you do
right.
next? How do you move forward?
What's next? The secondary movement. Anjali, let me bring you in here. What was your... let's call it your awakening moment in activism.
You know, I've been an activist for a fair amount of time, but I think, generally speaking, there have been a number of incidents in the Asian American community that have caused this sort of awakening, this very recent awakening. You know, we had a couple of years ago, we had the brutal assault of a 57-year-old Indian grandfather in Madison, Alabama, by a police officer. Leaving Suresh Bhai Patel partially paralyzed. We had the shooting death of Srinivas Kochabadla in Olathe, Kansas. Last year, he was told to get out of the country. We've had the burning of Islamic temple. So there have been quite a number of events leading up to and following the election of President Trump. And I think we're seeing quite a few members of the Asian American community in engaging in these marches now that we haven't before.
Derek, I'm going to bring you in here in a second, but because you can give us some perspective here that'll be useful, I think. But Coco, what did you think of the March for Our Lives rally?
So I think it's great. I think it's a way for young people to really enter the fold. And I think it's a really great entry point for people who maybe don't consider themselves political or activists or organizers to move into that first step, right? But again, going back to my original point, it's not all you can do, right? What is it that comes next? And if you can't, I would say something that the Parkland students have done really well is instead of focusing on the federal level, what can you do at the state level, right? How can you affect your state officials? What can you do at the local level? How can you bring attention to this issue in a way that's, I would sort of call it playing inside ball and outside ball, right? Like, what can you do on the outside to agitate? And then what can you do on the inside to work with lawmakers and policymakers to really push your issue forward and make sure that it's heard and puts it in a way that's actionable?
When you, Derek, when you hear the young voices in the March for Our Lives rally and that movement, planning, organizing events, what memories come rushing back to you?
It's great to see it because basically the activists of the 50s and the 60s, certainly Dr. King's crew, they were all young people. And then they founded SNCC, which was all college students. And so young people will move the needle. They have less to lose. They're not married. They don't have families. But it was great to see them get engaged because I think they'd been on the sidelines for too long. And there had to be an issue that moved the needle for them. And this is it.
Yeah. Quiz time. You guys ready for a little quiz?
Sure.
Sure.
So listen to this from New York Magazine. And, you know, Coco, this will make your point, so I'll give you an opportunity to say it again and again and again. So this is from New York Magazine. An estimated 750,000 people listened to a series of speakers, some of whom had lost friends and family members to gun violence. What march am I talking about? Thank you. The silence says it all. That was the Million Mom March of 2000. Mm. Okay, so Coco, to your point, the secondary movement, the marching is not enough, is it?
It's not. I really don't believe it is. And so specifically, I think with the March for Lives, which is very fresh in everyone's conscious, it's then asking, what does gun violence look like in your specific community, right? Because gun violence doesn't look the same in everyone's community. So it's asking who is most affected, how can we center those voices, and what is the work that we can do to sort of push that forward?
So I don't have a whole lot of time in my life. You guys don't either, okay? No one listening does. How many movements can the collective in this country process? And are we becoming as niche in our protest movements as we are in say, our media consumption, Anjali?
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, I think what was introduced with the recent March for Our Lives was intersectionality, solidarity. Really centering.
What does that mean, intersectionality?
So I think intersectionality to me is really centering and focusing on the groups who are most marginalized, who are at the brunt of very negative and harmful policies and laws. And I think we saw some of that at the March for Lives, which making sure that Black and Indigenous and Latinx voices were sort of the heart and soul for that. And I think we need to continue in that direction. I think that marginalized groups should be uplifted, their voices. And I think the rest of us need to serve as better allies and examine the ways that we, whether we are interrogating our own white supremacy and our own sort of racism, and making sure that we are giving platforms to people who are most affected.
We are looking at political marches with activist Coco Pappy and Anjali Njeti. We've made a little room for civil rights historian Derek Gilliard as well. Derek, are you concerned that we can burn out on all kinds of things in the society, that we'll burn out on protest movements?
We can. I think it really comes down to where the genesis of why you're doing it is rooted. Because I tell you, as I look, and we're losing them every week, the civil rights giants and the people that were the foot soldiers— Rita Samuels, who just died and will be funeralized on Saturday. These people, to their dying day, were on the front line, and they continued to work. And so there was something that motivated them to not make it a passing fancy.
Yeah. Coco, your thoughts on that?
So I think about it. It's really, what can you do in this moment right now? So say you can't go to a march because you have work or it's not ADA accessible. What can you do, right? So I think it's finding the thing that you really want to put your energy, your limited energy and time behind, and pushing forth in any free space you can, right? So like the thing that I'm really encouraging people to do right now is get behind candidates that you really believe in, right? So like with Georgia's win list, we've put some really amazing women in office, Bea Nugent, Deborah Gonzalez, because those women reflect our values that we really need to prioritize, right? We know those women will fight for us. So then it's like, okay, who at the state level, who at the local level can you put into office and how can you get behind them?
Yeah. Anjali, I wonder, in your activism work, were there lessons from the civil rights movement that you applied to the way you approach what you do in activism?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we as activists come with a very rich history. We have people in our history who have laid the groundwork. And to Coco's point, I mean, part of that is you march and then you go to the polls. And I think that's an important legacy of the civil rights movement. I mean, voting rights was at the heart of the civil rights movement. And we have very disturbing present day issues with voter integrity and election integrity. So I think that second necessary step is something that we should enforce and, you know, get behind your political candidates and continue to make your voice heard through the election process.
So, Derek, some of the lessons from the civil rights movement to be passed on, right, to this generation. Focus on issues, not personalities.
Yes.
Pressure specific companies and agencies.
Sure. Coalition building.
Preparation matters. Optics. Everything has to. Civility matters.
Absolutely.
Is this all making sense, Coco?
I would agree. I think it's not what you say, it's how you say it, right? How do you tell the truth in a way that people will hear you, right? How do you show up in a way that people will hear you? I mean, this really, we've got such, especially in Georgia, we've got such a rich history that we can reference, that we can move back into, that we can look at and see what strategies worked, right? Like Sunday pew sit-ins were a really great tactic by the civil rights movement, right? So how can we translate that to the modern day, actions that we're really trying to push, right? We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can find the leaders, we can find the elders in our community who have done the work and learn from them. We can get community organizing trainings, right? It's really about knowing what resources are out there and tapping into those and then sharing them with your community, right?
Yeah. I'm wondering if you feel, Anjali, that the fact that the Never Again movement, right, led by the students who survived at the Parkland shooting,
mm-hmm.
Does it suggest that these young people today, your generation, Coco's generation, will not be deterred by politics as usual?
You know, it's hard to say. I think our political system right now is very, you know, it's very tough to get involved.
Fractured,
yes.
Broken.
That's an excellent word. Fractured. We are fractured. We are frazzled. And sometimes it's like drinking water from a garden hose. I think having sort of short-term goals, helping out with specific races, for one thing. I know that a lot of youth in my area, organizing for a march can be a sort of finite thing. But then looking to the next step, I mean, we have November elections coming up. They're right around the corner. The primaries for those elections are right around the corner. So thinking three steps ahead is a good strategy. Knowing what you're going to do today, what you'll be doing next month, and what you'll be doing, next year in the work.
And Coco, realistic expectations?
So I think, yes to all those points. I think something that's also really important to highlight is cultural understanding, right? We all do not come to this work in the same way. We all do not have the same experience. And so something that I think we need to kind of speak on is the reaction to March of Lies versus, I would say, the reaction to Stephen Clark's death in California, right? How are we treating one group versus the other? Where are the indiscrepancies? And how can we better support things, right, when they... when they're harder to talk about, when they, you know, dig up deeper issues, right? So how do we talk about that and how do we support that?
Yeah. Thank you all. I really enjoyed
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Coco Pappy, a community organizer in Savannah. Anjali Injeti is a freelance writer based right here in Atlanta, and to civil rights historian Derek Gilliard. Derek, good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's been a while. Thanks for your time to all of you.
Thank
and that
you.
Is our program for today. But as always, we want to hear from you. Have you marched for a cause? Tell us about it. You can give us a ring at 404-500-9457. Or you can post on Twitter or Facebook. We're at OST Talk. For today, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Tony Harris. Have a great day.